Well, my wife and I, at the beginning of August, may I, before I start, ask how many of you have never been to a meeting of this kind before? Are there any of you who fit that category? Or have you all been acquainted with this work in the past? I was just wondering how much explanation you had a chance to do while you were waiting for us.
Yes, we did read this thing on
the past. Fine. Well, then I won't have to do that. As I was saying, about the first part of August, my wife and I realized that Master Kirpal Singh was not going to be able to come to the United States this year, as he had hoped, and so we decided that we'd better go and see him. He agreed that we could come, and on August 30th, we got on a Pan-American flight, and after 24 hours, more or less, of flying, with about four or five stops in between, we arrived at New Delhi Airport, and were greeted there by two angels in white, you might say. One of them named Kuku, which is really the name that Princess Narendra goes by. She has served the master for quite a few years. And another lady named Eileen. Well, they were there with a jeep, and they took us to the ashram in Delhi. It's about 2 acres in extent, and it has a railroad running by, has a canal running by. They have facilities there for foreign visitors, and there were a number of other foreign visitors beside ourselves. Oh, let's see, there was a family from the United States who had changed their name to Singh, S-I-N-G-H. You may know that all Singhs are Sikhs, but not all Sikhs are Singhs. However, the master didn't approve of their changing the name, so I don't know what they're going to do. They had a little baby with them, too, about 8 months of age, and they had named her Sushila, and then it was decided that her name really should be Mira. So the baby was getting a little confused and responding to the different names. There was another couple from the United States. I'm afraid their name escapes me, but he was the only one who was able to keep his beard on while there. There were a couple of other young men who had arrived, and the suggestion was made to them by the master and others that perhaps they were not born into the Sikh tradition and they shouldn't try to emulate them, and so they did respond and they shaved their beards. I think both of them were about 19 years of age. One young man who was going to the university on the West Coast, and another one who was from Vancouver. I noticed a number of people from Vancouver were out there. As a matter of fact, while we were there, three from Vancouver had come. Apparently, they have started a vegetarian restaurant in Vancouver, and it's sort of a co-op. And when they make enough money, one of them takes the profits and hies himself off to the ashram in India, where he stays for a while. They were all staying, I think, for a three-month period, which is about all that the Indian government will let us Americans come in for. After that, you have to get your visa renewed. Well, anyhow, there were a couple of other people there. There was a West German composer who had been there 4.5 years before. Very nice fellow. And there were a couple of people from England there, and as I say, there was this Canadian. And we made up the international group. When we arrived, when my wife and I arrived, the master was not present. He was visiting his home in Dehradun up near the Himalaya Mountains. And he had taken an English couple with him who were visiting. They couldn't be there very long, so he wanted to give them a chance to be near him as long as was possible. And we consequently spent the interim time getting settled, which meant getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning for meditation when a bell sounded. And presumably we were to meditate for 2 to 3 hours then. I don't know that we did necessarily to begin with. It was a matter of a complete adjustment of our physical structures, because it took about 3 or 4 days to get used to the new timing. Anyhow, the master finally did return. And there had been gradually gathering there a number of Indians, because they were going to take initiation. And some of them had gathered as early as 2 or 3 days before. And they sang at night and prayed at night and slept out on the ground or slept in the big shed, which was their quarters. And the master finally did arrive, came up in a car, and the whole ashram came to life. You could almost feel it physically coming to life as he personally came in. Do you have a picture of him that you've shown? It's right there. I didn't get a chance to see it. But it doesn't do him justice, even if I can't see it. He got out of the car and looked around and saw my wife and I. We were the newcomers there. He'd seen everybody else before. And just his look was graciousness itself. Shortly after he went into his house where everyone was gathered in front, he suggested that we come in, and we did. And the other members of the International Colony joined us, and he engaged us in conversation. And the first thing he did was answer a question that I had never put to him. Have you heard him speak on tape? It's a little difficult to understand, isn't it? Because your ears aren't accustomed to it. But the first thing he said to me was that 2/3 of my communication is through radiation and 1/3 is oral. It was a question that had been plaguing me for quite a while. I mean, why bother to listen if you can't understand it? We'll get to that a little bit later, however. He asked us about the trip that we have had, and he said, would you like to go on a trip with me? I'm going to the Punjab, and they're going to visit a few places, and of course we said we would be delighted to go. He said, we'll leave on the 10th of September. All right, fine. And the next few days, we made preparations to go on that trip, of which more later. But in the meantime, he had to put on a satsang on a Sunday, and it was held under a beautifully tapestried tarpaulin, which had been stretched on poles to cover a rather vast area, and there were places, carpets for people to sit. The Indians had come in there to sit down. But then it began to rain, and the tarpaulin leaked, and the rain dripped everywhere, and the area became a vast sea of mud. And we moved from one island to another. We, as foreigners, were treated very well. They had chairs provided for us, and people hastened up to move the chairs as soon as a leak would spring. But that was really beside the point. The point of this whole thing for us was, and this was the whole series of lessons that seemed to come up, the point seemed to be that after the first burst of rain accompanied by thunder and lightning, the master seated up on the platform in front with two additional speakers with him. He believes in letting everybody tell their views, express their views. He smiled. And after the next burst of rain and the next burst of scampering around for a place to get in and out of it, he said, this is the test. I'll give it to you. And after the third burst of rain, and many of them passed the test beautifully, they just sat there with their legs crossed in the lotus position and let the rain come down on top of them. After the third burst, he said, well, you passed the test. And the rain stopped for the remainder of the speeches. He finished his, and then he allowed another guru from the Delhi area and a professor from a local university to say what they had to say. And I must say, they said it, even though I didn't understand a word, it was all in Hindi. They said theirs rather emotionally, and the master was, as always, calm. Calm. And periodically he would break in, almost apologetically, perhaps, as they told me later, to refute a point or two that had been raised by some of these people. After the satsang was over and everybody had retreated into living quarters, the rain started again to a small degree. We were waiting for this trip to get underway on the 10th, and we heard it had been postponed, and we didn't know why, and we didn't worry about it. At that stage of things, the master invited everybody else in the foreign colony to come along on the trip too, and they were delighted to come, even the couple with the babies. And we started out on the morning of the 11th, as I recall it was a Tuesday. And the master said, come on in, I want to see you. And as much as you will be going back a little early, we were only there on the 3-week plan, and he presented us with a couple of wonderful books inscribed, his own books inscribed with comments. And he looked at us and said, you may encounter some hardships on this trip. And he said, I want you to bear them all for the love of the Master. All right, we certainly agreed with him on that point. 2 hours later, as we were driving out of Delhi toward the Punjab, which is in the northwest area of India, we were in an Ambassador automobile, which is an Indian make. I guess it formerly was British, but it's Indian now. And there was room for 6 of us. In the front was a driver, an Indian driver, Cuckoo, and Eileen. And in the back, a man from Germany, and Kira and I. It was drizzling. And as we got out on the highway, our rather venturesome driver, and I tell you, you have no idea how venturesome Indian drivers are. They have 3 cars abreast on a road that's not fit for 2 cars abreast, and they think nothing of it. But as we got out on that road and the rain continued to come down, he passed a truck, and the car skidded, and it turned over. It turned over on its side. We all crawled out unhurt, all 6 of us. And no glass was broken in the car. The only thing that happened to the car, as a matter of fact, was an indentation on the left front door from a barrel that we happened to meet there. We crashed over a tree as well with the front. Everybody stopped, came, pulled the car up, and it continued on the rest of the journey with no further incident to the car. Nothing smashed in the car, nothing that we had there. We couldn't understand it. We guessed what had happened. The master came back a little bit later and looked over the situation, and he said it was the mercy of God that had done this. A little bit later, though, we heard via several people, never directly from the master, that the master had told his secretary, who had told someone else, that if we had started on the 10th, several of us would have been killed. And he postponed our leave-taking on that trip for one day to suit the circumstances that would be more favorable on that day. That's all we know about it. But we do know that we're safe and alive. We had a lot of conversation about it, as you can well imagine. But that's all we ever learned about it. And we continued on our way to a place called Ludhiana, which is an Indian city of several hundred thousand. And throughout India, the master has a number of ashrams located where he visits periodically. And Ludhiana is one of those places. They had a very lovely ashram there. We stayed at an American-built university dormitory. The Americans had built a school there, a college, agricultural college, and we stayed at the dormitory. But periodically, we'd go over to the ashram to sit in on the hard ground a little bit later. Although to begin with, we foreigners were favored, especially my wife and I, with chairs, because we had better be known that we didn't think we could sit cross-legged. And Rambo, we had chairs brought up for us at every conceivable place, and we felt rather conspicuous in some places where there were thousands of people, and we were sitting in chairs and they were sitting on the ground with their legs folded. But perhaps I should say here something about the initiations. And by the way, tell me when I have just 25 minutes left, because that's when I want to start the thing. Is that time just about come?
No.
Initiations. There was one back at the satsang in Delhi before we left. And he had them after a series of lectures that he gave at each of the 3 places we stopped. Ludhiana was the first, Ferozepur, which is very near the Pakistan border, was the second place, and Amritsar was the third. Initiation is a marvelous thing to witness as he does it. I underline as he does it. He sits all the people down in the area which has been chosen and walks among them and says to this person, no, off they go. Separates them as God separates, or the shepherd separates the sheep from the goats, I suppose, I don't know. And perhaps three or four or five people are separated from the group that has chosen to come to be initiated. And they retire, some of them not happily. And then the rest of them he does initiate. He initiates them to see things within and to hear things within. And in this first initiation that we witnessed in Delhi, there were 165 Indians who had come there from some miles away. Some of them had walked to be there. As I say, that some had been there for several days. And of them, 63 of them saw the Master within. And all of them saw various other things before the initiation was over. He saw to it that they did. Some who did not were asked to step outside, and the Master went out with them and saw to it in an additional session that they did see something. And then, as he explained later, and as you'll hear him constantly reiterate in the interview we're going to play on the tape recorder, he says that he gives them this as something to start with. It doesn't necessarily mean that the people who got it in initiation can hang on to it. That's up to them. Whether they've cleaned their vessel enough, namely their body, by following the instructions that he has offered them, in order to see what they saw in initiation all the time, that's up to them. But at least he has indicated to them that it can be done, that someone who has the master power flowing through him, and as far as I know, he's the only one in the world who does. I mean, fantastic statement to make, but I finally arrived at this conclusion after quite a bit of examination. I mean, my wife and I have been looking into these things for quite a few years now, and this conclusion I have finally reached. He's a very unprepossessing person, but nevertheless, he is royalty. He is royalty. There's no question about it. He acts like the king that he is, and those who are with him are treated as guests. We've never had such hospitality in our lives as we received from him over there. We couldn't pay for a thing. We couldn't provide anything of our own. It was all there. He has willing assistants who help him, of course, in this. But there are a number of incidents I could tell you about. Maybe we'll have time for a couple of them. While we were sitting at Ferozepur, watching him talk, there were a couple of thousand people behind us, and he insisted that we sit in the front row. And he periodically was raising his hand to emphasize a point, and I leaned over to Akira and suggested, just whispered to her, why don't you look at his lifeline in his left hand, see what you can make out. The master was seated some distance above us and was talking to this huge crowd behind. We were a small portion of the audience. Later that night, when we came back to our living quarters, we had what is known as darshan. In other words, the foreign colony would gather just to look at the master, because, as I say, the radiations from his eyes are something to behold. And he was making a few comments, and he looked at me and he said, well, were you able to figure out my fate? was astounded. And earlier that same evening, in our room, I had mentioned to Kira, I don't know how I'm going to keep up this fast pace, this routine that he's setting for us. I mean, it's attending one meeting after another all day long. I mentioned this to her in her room, in our room. And at that same session of darshan, the master looked at me again and said, "Well, there's no rest for the master." And the next morning, I put my head out the door. He was going out to take care of another satsang. And he looked at me and he said, "Well, I'm still going strong. I'm still going strong." There were numerous incidents. Eileen, who came to meet us, one of the two people who did, when she first came there, she developed a tumor inside the size of her fist. The doctors told her that she'd better get to a hospital. In fact, they reserved a room for her in the hospital. The master was about to go off on a trip somewhere for a week. And when he was consulted, he said, no, hold off for a while. So she did, and she was feeling terrible. He came back from his trip. The doctor said, "You must be operated on now. Your life is hanging in the balance." The master was consulted. He said, "Well, I'm going on another week's trip. Hold off again." And she did. The doctors pleaded with her. She wouldn't go. When the master came back from the second trip, they examined Eileen. The tumor had disappeared. Numerous stories like that. There's a girl who came to the ashram and who was blind. She had acquired her blindness during a period of giving birth to a child. And how did that go, Phil?
She became born blind when she was giving birth to the child. And her mother was an initiate of the master. But before they went to the master, they tested another one for all doctors. And the doctor said that the nerve was gone. He just left it there. She will never see again. And the mother brought her to the ashram to the master, and the master talked to her and asked her to concentrate on the third eye. So she did. And then the mother asked, "What do you see?" And she said, "I see the master." "And what does the master tell you?" And she said, she told me to continue concentration. So she did, and she regained her sight, and she's in the ashram doing her.
Yeah. Trying to think of some of the other things that happened. There was a young man who was with us, an Indian, a Sikh, and I suppose all of you know about the Sikhs. They have beards and they have turbans that hold back their hair and so on. The master himself was born a Sikh in the Punjab, and of course you can see that he has his beard and his turban, although I might say he has less hair than I do when he doesn't have his turban on. Something else, too, that I'll go into a little bit later, and that is that he has lost most of his teeth, as you will hear when we play this tape. And I want to talk about that specifically before we get into that. But in the meantime, we went to Ferozepur. We went to, was that where we followed him into the leper's colony? Yes, we went to a leper's colony with him at that time. He went to a blind school, and he lectured to the blind people. Up at Amritsar, he allowed us to spend some time at the Golden Temple of the Sikhs, which is literally a golden temple. It's like a peninsula in a pool of water, the pool of Amritsar. There's an interesting story in connection with that, and it is that when the fifth Sikh guru built that pool a couple of hundred years ago, he engaged a Muslim architect to construct it. Now, on the inner plains, there is literally a pool of Amritsar in which people, when they reach it, can wash their karmas off. I asked the master about that later. I said, is there literally such a pool? He said, yes, there is. Well, anyhow, when this was being constructed, the Muslim architect kept saying to the fifth Sikh guru, well, in order to get the correct information so that I can build this accurately, I'll have to see what it looks like. So the guru had to take him within the pool of Amritsar. And every day he did this, sometimes twice, three times a day, and would get a chance to journey there. That's the story. We went into the temple itself, and there in five different alcoves are five copies of various sizes of the Granth Sahib, which is the sacred book of the Sikh, and which is made up of not only the Guru's writing, but a number of other saints. Kabir, who was not a Sikh, and a number of others. And people are reading those in various parts of this lovely temple. At Amritsar, we had to leave because we were only going to be there for 21 days and the master was going to continue on by himself. He told the whole foreign group to go home. And we went in to see him. We had a private talk with him. One of the 19-year-old boys was also going home, and he joined the group, and we had a private talk. And then the last morning, we were about to start out on our own. We saw the master once more, and I remember saying to him, goodbye, master, and he said, and he has such a wonderfully expressive, kind face. He said, I never say goodbye. I'm always with you. And we departed. We went back to Delhi and got on our plane, eventually came back home on the 21st of September last month. Before I play this interview that I did with the master, I did it one night, I think it was the night before we started out on our trip through the Punjab. We were seated in the front part of his home, as you'll hear, and I was down below. He was seated in a chair. That time I didn't get to sit in a chair. I sat on the floor, everybody else. And we just talked to him. The master held the microphone himself, and then he held it down to me for occasional questions and then brought it back up. That's why you'll hear the noise here.